This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who touched Derby, 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I am retired jockey Christina McManigal, joining you from our Lexington, Kentucky studio. Thank you to everyone listening tonight on Sirius 220, XM 206, and to those of you listening to our website at horseracingradio.net. A portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF provides assistance to disabled riders who have given everything to the sport. If you are able to help, please visit the website pdjf.org. Now tonight, we are joined by the 2015 Eclipse Award-winning apprentice, already a graded stakes winning rider with 288 wins and counting, over $7.7 million in earnings. I am very happy to introduce jockey Tyler Gaffalione. Tyler, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much.
Great having you here. Yeah, great having you. I was speaking with you right before we went on air about, you know, my gosh, you are all over the place, flying everywhere, Kentucky, Florida. You're keeping busy.
Oh, yes, ma'am. It's an exciting time right now. This is the best time of the year, I would say. You have all the two-year-olds turning 3 and then all the races prepping for them. So everyone's busy, and I'm just excited to be given the opportunity to go ride these horses.
Of course, of course. Take every opportunity that comes your way. And as I said in the intro, I'm here in Lexington, Kentucky. Of course, Keeneland's going on right now, an exciting time of year, like you said. And you've been in Keeneland. You've been here riding various times. And what do you think? What do you think of Lexington?
I love it. I can't wait to go back again. I've been there twice now. I've been there 3 times. I went there when I was younger. I think I was 10. I went there with a trainer to go run a couple horses. It was a great experience, but I went about 2 weeks ago to ride for the first time there, and I rode the bluegrass, and it was such a great experience. Just the atmosphere, the people, everyone was so welcoming, and just it was a great time.
How was it to ride in the Toyota Bluegrass Stakes and the crowds and the people there and the excitement over that race? How was that?
It was one of the best moments of my life. So we were loading in the gate, and I remember looking over, and the gate's right in front of the crowd, and the crowd was just starting to get going. They were starting to make cheers and everything. And then the gates opened, and the crowd went crazy. And that's the last time I heard them. But that experience was really great.
That's fantastic. And you mentioned that's the last time you heard them. And from a rider's perspective, I get exactly what you're talking about. But maybe describe to the audience what it's like. You hear the crowd for a second, but then I guess you're just so focused on the race. That doesn't even – do you ever focus on the crowd when you're coming down the lane?
Oh, no, ma'am. You don't really notice they're there until you pull up and you come back. And then if the people are still there, they're cheering at the winner's circle or just – talking to you on the way back.
Right, exactly. But you're in the moment. You're so focused. Exactly.
Exactly. You don't really hear them. You kind of tune them out and focus on what's in front of you.
Right. Now, Tyler, let's go back to the beginning and how you first became involved in the sport. You mentioned you were here in Kentucky when you were 10 running a horse. So you must have been involved from a very early age. And tell us how you got involved.
Well, my grandfather and father were both jockeys, so I kind of grew up in the business, you would say. From a young age, I started getting on horses. we actually had a farm growing up, so we always had ponies, and we just go run out to the fields and get on whichever one was right there. So was always getting on horses. And when I turned 10, my dad started ponying me on a couple of thoroughbreds. He would get on the pony, and I get on the horse, and we go out early before. Early was like 6, while it was still dark. That way nobody would see us, and we wouldn't get in trouble. But he allowed me to get on horses, and was my whole family was very supportive of me throughout everything, and just always helped me and whatever I needed. They were really great for me.
That's fantastic, Tyler. And my gosh, I don't know what I was doing at 10 years old, but it wasn't getting on thoroughbreds in the mornings. I know that. And to have it in your blood and to start at such an early age, it all makes sense how it comes so naturally to you. And do you remember going back the first few times that you sat on a thoroughbred and you could feel that power that was underneath you? Do you remember feeling, did it come naturally to you, I guess, early on?
It took some work. I won't lie to you. At first, it wasn't the most comfortable thing, but after a while, I got adapted, and just my dad gave me all the confidence in the world, so it really helped me out.
What did your dad teach you?
If you love it, just do what comes naturally. He taught me positioning in my hands and where to put my feet, where to ride comfortably. Don't worry about riding too short or too long. Just ride where you're comfortable. The main thing was just becoming comfortable with the horse first.
Right. And horses can feel that. Wouldn't you agree with that?
100%. I think it helps, especially in a race. You get a horse, let's say you're going to the track before the race. You're in the warm-ups, you're warming them up, and you're just trying to get to know the horse, get along with them, let them know that, give him the confidence that he needs to perform that day, and just basically tell him everything's all right.
Exactly.
I think that helps out mentally and physically in the race.
Right. Right. They're very intuitive in regards to that. And so you grew up around it in the sport, and your father was a very successful jockey. Quit riding in 1998. I looked him up with over 800 wins, including victories in the Tampa Bay Derby and Florida Turf Cup Handicap. I mean, he was very successful. Do you remember as a kid going to the track and watching your father ride?
Oh, yeah. It was at that point, it was the greatest time because the racetrack was new. Everything was new, and it was just getting into it at that point. So it was all exciting for me.
Do you remember seeing maybe some of the bad sides of such a career, your father? Do you remember injuries or anything like that?
Yes, ma'am. He was injured quite often. The reason he retired was he broke his neck and dislocated a couple vertebrae in his back. Mm-hmm. So I was there for all that, and it was scary, but he always told me everything was going to be all right, so I believed him.
Did that make you nervous at all, jumping into the sport yourself?
Not really, because it comes with the business. It's with anything you do, you can always get hurt. You never know, but that's a risk you take to do what you love.
That's exactly right. Well said, Tyler. And Tyler Gaffalione joining us tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Tyler, you're 10 years old, and you're getting on thoroughbreds, and your dad's giving you advice there on the farm, ponying you right there by your side, giving you all the instruction that you need. And when was it that you decided that was exactly what you wanted to do? You wanted to be a jockey.
The first time I ever breezed a horse.
Ah, that's a good answer.
I was 11 at that time.
11? Breezing horses. Wow. Describe that feeling.
It was scary at first because we were galloping to the pole, and I had galloped hundreds of horses at this point, and we broke off. We're going a quarter mile. We're head and head. And I just remember freezing up. Everything was just going so fast, and I remember just kind of locking up on the horse, and when I pulled up, I had the biggest smile. I was just frozen with excitement, basically. And I remember just always wanting to get back to that.
Yeah. Definitely a rush, as you were describing it. I just couldn't help but smile, because that is one of the greatest feelings, besides winning, of course, but just to feel that rush you get from sitting on the back of a 1,200-pound animal going at those kinds of speeds, 40 miles an hour, it's a pretty incredible feeling.
It's like nothing else.
Nothing else. And so the first time you breezed a horse, you decided you wanted to be a jockey. And so what were the steps you took following that to preparing yourself for a riding career? Did you work out? Did you play sports? Did you focus on school, or school kind of took a back seat?
Well, school was always most important with my family. My rule was I had to graduate high school before I could become a professional jockey. So that was what was always was most important. But the steps that I took, I galloped horses for about 5-6 years. I went to Kentucky, Louisiana, Maryland. I breezed horses in the sales. I groomed for a couple people. I mucked stalls, walked horses. My dad made me start from the bottom, so really taught me a good work ethic. And
do you feel like that's...
Also, for my 16th birthday, I got an equisizer, so that was really great.
Oh, yes, yes, the equisizer. Now, to describe, we've mentioned the equisizer on the show before in the past. I don't know if anyone's really described what it is. And so maybe describe what an equisizer is to our audience.
It's basically a mechanical horse, and it mimics the movement of a horse during a race. You push on his neck, and his body extends, and you push back. It teaches you balance, timing, and strength.
Keeps you fit, too. I know that's a
yes.
Pretty good workout.
It's also a great rehab thing for when you get injured. You can come back. That's a good way to get fit.
Exactly. Sure. Exactly. And you said you also started from the ground up. Your father was insistent on that, to teach you good work ethic, et cetera, and you traveled around Kentucky, Louisiana, my goodness. So you really understood the lifestyle from the very beginning. And how do you think working from the ground up, working on the ground with these 1,200-pound animals, how did that help you for your future riding career? What did that teach you?
It taught me that it's not just riding the horses. There's so much more involved. There's people out there every morning. And it doesn't start at the track. It starts at the farm, where these horses are broken, raised, basically. And these people put hundreds of hours into these horses just to get them to one race, or just to have the excitement of being in a race. So it's not all about me, or it's not all about the rider. It's everyone involved. It's a team effort, and it really makes you appreciate what happens behind the scenes.
Well said. It definitely does. And puts the pressure on you a little bit as well when you're giving that horse to ride in a race, a minute and 12 seconds, whatever it is, and you realize how much work it's taken to get to that point.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, and so it really puts everything into perspective for you. So you're in high school, and did you play any sports in high school?
Yes, ma'am. I played football, soccer, baseball. I did track, weightlifting, and wrestling.
Ah, wrestling. A lot of jockeys wrestled formally in high school, and I guess that kind of teaches you about weight and certain things like that. How do you struggle with your weight at all, Tyler?
No, ma'am. I've been very lucky so far. I stay around 110. I don't have to reduce or anything. I just basically watch what I eat and try and stay healthy.
Well, that's very good. You're very fortunate. That's a big advantage to get a leg up on a horse and to be strong, most definitely.
Exactly.
Most definitely. So you played sports in high school, and then did you enjoy school at all? I mean, you were told you had to graduate, but did you actually enjoy school?
I did. I actually did. There was a few classes that caught my attention and that I actually really enjoyed. But like any other kid, there's other classes that you just don't want to go to. It's not your strongest subject. But we dealt with it and we got through it. And it was a great experience. I'm really glad that my parents made me graduate.
Sure.
Can't. Yeah.
Always good to get as much education as possible, of course. What was your favorite subject in school, Tyler?
I liked U.S. history.
History? That's not too bad. Yeah. Yeah, not too bad. Math was always my worst subject, so if you're going to say math, I was going to have to pick on
it. I was actually pretty decent at math, but a lot of work goes behind it.
Of course. So you graduate. You graduate high school, and I remember what it was like when I was 16 and I wanted to get my driver's license that day. Was it similar for you when you graduated high school? Did you go get your jock's license like the next day, or how did that work?
I actually waited a couple months. I went to Ocala and started getting on horses for the summer because I had just been in school, so I wanted to get fit again. So I went back to Ocala and I was getting on horses there for 4 or 5 months, and then I moved down here and applied for a license.
Who did you work for in Ocala?
I was a freelancer. I worked for Bobby Dodd. Red Kern was a great influence for me. I worked for him 3 or 4 times. He really taught me a lot.
Were you mostly getting on babies, young horses?
Yes, ma'am. Breaking, prepping them for sales.
Sure, mostly what goes on in Ocala. And how did that help you and your riding abilities, getting on those young green horses?
I think it helped me out a lot because I would say with the babies, you actually, an older horse, he knows what he's doing. You can go out there and you can pretty much give him his head and he'll just go around there and he'll pull up and you go home. But the baby, you got to be on alert at all times, always pay attention, get to know the horse and learn what he likes and what he doesn't like. And really teaches you just to get along with the horse.
Absolutely. And I know from my experience galloping babies and young horses, I always enjoyed knowing that I taught the horse what they would learn and go on to do for all different riders in their future. And that's kind of a cool experience to teach a horse like that.
I always especially enjoyed when the babies that I would work in sales and prep for sales, they go on and you watch them run first time out and they win, and some of them would go on to win stakes, and it was always a very exciting thing for me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Knowing that you helped in that success of that horse. You said a little bit ago you traveled around also before you took out your license, Kentucky, Louisiana, Maryland. How was that for you at such a young age to leave your family, I'm assuming you did, and to travel around to the different racetracks, and how was that?
It was always really exciting for me. I love my family and I love being around them. But as a young kid, it was great to go to new states. I wasn't by myself. I was always with somebody. But to me, it was, I'm by myself. I'm in a new state. This is great.
I can completely relate.
It was very exciting.
You kind of have that gypsy streak in you. You like to travel and see new places. And what would you say was your favorite location when you were traveling around doing that?
Lafayette, Louisiana.
Why is that?
I don't know. It just had. I like the way the people talked there. The food was great, and just the scenery. It was different. I'd never seen anything like it, so it was really interesting.
Nice.
The culture behind everything as well.
Sure. Do you intend to ever go back there?
Oh, yes, ma'am. I would love to. If not for a vacation, to go ride would be amazing. But
right.
We'll see what happens.
See what happens. You already made it back up to Kentucky, so you never know.
Yes, ma'am.
You never know. So you officially become a licensed jockey. And tell me about your first ride in a parimutuel race.
I rode my first race on September 5th of 2014, and it was going 3/4 of a mile on the older horse, and we broke from the gates, and just kind of everything just happened. it was real. Everything was happening so fast. I didn't really get to really just everything just happened. I kind of rode the race. And it was all new, but it was the time of my life.
Oh, I'm sure. And you say it happened so fast. And again, I can completely relate to that because wouldn't you agree that as you ride, things start to slow down a little bit?
Oh, yes, ma'am, definitely.
But that first race, just a blur. Before you know it, it's all over. Were you very tired after the race?
No, I was really surprised that I wasn't because I thought I would be. But I guess we had a good foundation under me.
Working out on the Equisizer paid off, right?
Yes, ma'am.
And when did your first winner come around?
It was my third mount 2 days later on the 7th.
Wow.
I was going a flat mile at Gulfstream. My filly broke alertly, and she put herself in a good position, laid about third, 2 lengths off the lead. And approaching the quarter pole, my filly, I had the most horse, and she went up and took the lead, and she wound up holding on for a length and a half victory. There was an inquiry, though.
Really?
Yes, ma'am.
What happened?
She was starting to lug in late. And there was a horse on the inside of me, and he claimed foul, but they disallowed it.
Phew. I bet you were sweating bullets that first win to have that happen.
Yeah. Yes, I was. And the best part was I got on the phone to talk to the stewards. Don Brumfield, the steward here, he says, go get back up on your horse. Congratulations on your first win, Jack. And I'll never forget that.
That's a great story. That is crazy. I can't imagine winning your first race and then to have that inquiry sign light up. That had to be a nerve-wracking feeling. Most definitely.
It was a little scary, but nothing you can do.
Exactly. And I remember not my first win, but I remember I was an apprentice, and you know, when you're starting out, maybe you have trouble switching sticks. It maybe doesn't come as smoothly early on, and you have to work at that. Was that something that you really had to work on, switching to that left hand to prevent those horses from lugging in?
I'm actually very lucky. I'm ambidextrous, so I can throw and hit with my both right and left hand.
That's very good.
And, of course, my dad made me practice a lot on the Equisizer. That was one thing because we always said most riders, you can have a good right hand, but if you have a good left hand, it's hard to beat.
Exactly.
So that was one thing I really worked hard on before I started riding, in the mornings practicing. So when it came time to actually switch, there's a couple of times where, of course, you're going to go to pull it through or just go to switch and it gets tangled, but the transition was pretty well for me.
Good. Wouldn't you agree? And I found that as I worked, I actually developed a good left hand, but I found that many horses, they don't get hit on the left side nearly as much as the right, and that almost is an advantage to hit a horse on the left side. They're not used to it, and that almost gives you an extra, startles them a little bit more. Would you agree with that?
100%. There's been many times that I've been in a race and I'll be hitting right handed and I'll just pull my stick over to my left hand, just pop them once, and it almost surprises them, and you get either a half a length or a length out of that, and you can hold off or get to the wire first to be able to win. So there are many, many times that's happened.
And that has to be a good feeling, knowing that it was because you used your good judgment and your good skill with switching to that left hand and cracking them on that left side, and that's how you get the win. That's a good feeling.
It's very nice.
Knowing that hard work paid off. And you mentioned your father working with you on the Equisizer and making sure you had the ability to switch sticks. What else did your father teach you in the early days of actually riding races? Would he call you up after maybe a specific ride and give you advice, or what would he do?
It's funny. I would send him after a race that I think I might have messed up something or we can improve on something. I'd send him a text, ask him to watch a replay. And when I got done that day, I go home and I call him and we watch the replay together. He'd tell me what he thought I could have done differently. And there was a few people that were helping me out like that. But my father was the biggest influence for me.
That's awesome to have your dad on your side helping you so much. Who were the other people that would help you?
Well, there was my agent, Walter Blub. His father, Walter Blub Sr., he's a Hall of Fame rider.
Of course.
He helped me out a lot. There's riders of the Jock Troop. Javier Castellano was tremendous help. Julia Leperoux, John Velasquez, Edgar Prado was major for me. He helped me out with everything, personal and on the track. He was just a great influence for me, a good role model, and a great guy.
Edgar Prado, of course, a class act. You mentioned personal and professional. What were some of the things he gave you advice about?
Just how to conduct yourself in a business manner, approach trainers in the morning, how to talk to them, investing my money and saving my money in the right, make sure I save my money, don't spend it, and just he helped me out a lot. He was great for me.
Edgar's a great guy. And how would he tell you? How would he tell you to conduct yourself to trainers? What specific things would he tell you about that?
Basically, just how to talk to them about the horse. Tell them what's going on. You don't want to lie to them. You want to tell them the truth. That way, if there is anything wrong or if there's something you can improve on, they know what to do.
Exactly. It's a team effort. You used that phrase a little while earlier, and it is an advantage if you can tell the trainer exactly what's going on with the horse. That way they can work on that, and then next time around, you get the mount back, and you turn that into a win, of course.
Yes, ma'am. Even if we don't get the mount back, the best thing for the trainer or the horse right now is so we try and help everyone out.
Exactly, exactly. We'll continue our visit with jockey Tyler Gaffalione after this short commercial break. Stay with us. You are listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Being a jockey may be one of the more dangerous professions in all of sports. In a split second, you can go from the top of the standings to never being able to stand again. I'm Mike Penna, and over the years, I've had the privilege of talking with many of the top jockeys in thoroughbred racing. And to a person, they will tell you that on any given day, before any given race, when they get a leg up, there's no guarantee they'll return the way they left. It's simply the reality of being a jockey. The Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund does amazing work, providing financial assistance to some 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic on-track injuries. Since its founding 10 years ago, the PDJF has disbursed over $7 million to permanently disabled jockeys. And I'm proud to say that the PDJF is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network, but the only way they can continue helping those disabled riders who have given our sport so much is through your generosity and support. So I encourage you to visit pdjf.org and start making a difference today.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Around the far turn, Best Behavior sticks her neck out in front. On the inside, Kelly Star, Legal Laura. Danessa Deluxe continues to make progress. Going to have to come five wide around Moment of Delight, though. And then comes Curlin's Princess Pink Puppy and Stiffed on the outside. Three quarters in 111 flat, they're into the stretch. And up the rail, it's Cali Star. Best Behavior on the outside, the two favorites. But Cali Star getting away now. Cali Star opening up. Best Behavior is next. Moment of Delight and Stiffed on the far outside as Cali Star and Tyler Gaffleone take the rampart by 2.5 lengths on the wire. And that was Best Behavior followed by Stiffed, Moment of Delight, and Danessa Deluxe.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Christina McManigal joined tonight by jockey Tyler Gaffleone. And you heard the Grade 3 Rampart Stakes, Tyler Gaffleone's victory aboard Cali Star. And that was an incredible experience, Tyler. We're going to go over that in detail. But before we get to that, before we went to break, we were talking about your very early stages in your jockey career and the people you sought advice from. And let's continue where we left off there. And so we were discussing your very first victory and what your dad would help you with and the advice he would give you, Edgar Prado, Walter Blum, etc. And how would you say it continued from there? Did you pick up on things pretty quickly? Did you take off from that very first win?
No, it took some time. We struggled for a little bit, but we were just riding horses, just trying to get the experience.
Of course, and that's what it takes. The more you ride, the more you learn, of course. And so you would say it was pretty tough early on there, starting out.
It really wasn't that tough on me. It was just our business. You would say at that point we weren't doing so well. But we weren't really looking to win five races off the bat to start our 7-pound. My agent and I discussed with my father, and we decided it was best to just ride as many horses as we could just to get the experience before we decided to start our one-year apprenticeship.
Tyler, describe that process to our listeners, how when you actually start the bug, time starts ticking. Describe that whole process.
After you win your fifth race, you have a year from that date to win as many races as you can. You start as a 10-pound bug, and as soon as you win your fifth race, you go down to 7. And after you win your 35th or your 40th race total, that's when you go down to a 5-pound apprentice.
And it's very important to take advantage of that weight allowance as an apprentice because many trainers like to take the weight off their horses. Do you think that's a really big advantage?
I think it is for some horses. It just really depends. Of course, when you're talking 5 to 10 pounds, I think it does make a difference, but really it all just depends.
I completely agree with that statement on certain horses. And which horses would you say would take most advantage of that?
Speed horses, smaller horses, horses that just need a little bit of extra help, I would say.
Sure, that makes perfect sense. And so you're riding just to ride and gain experience. And when would you say was the turning point from just riding to gain experience to actually getting noticed?
I would say around the sometime in the winter meet of that year.
Was there
at Gulfstream?
Was there a specific experience that maybe sticks out to you that really just made you take off?
I won 3 allowance races in a week, and it's a winter meet. That's pretty good.
That's very good.
At that point, I was really excited. But one of them was a 1.716 on the grass, and I had rode a horse that was a long shot, and he comes from behind. It was his first time going the distance for John Toscano. And I sat last the whole way and was patient, and at the top of the lane, I kicked out, and I nailed Javier Castellano on the wire, beat him a nose.
Ooh. That is awesome. That is awesome. That would get you noticed to nail Javier Castellano on the wire. Doesn't happen too often. Would you say riding on the grass, would you say that's tougher to do? Would you say it's just more difficult? How would you describe riding on the grass versus the dirt?
I love riding on the grass. I think it's more challenging because you have to save ground. You have to be patient. You have to ride a smart race. You can't get yourself stopped. You can't get in trouble. And you always just want to have a clear, straight path.
So you have to ride a smart race.
On the dirt, things can happen. You can go a little wider, and you can still win. And you can do the same on the grass if you have the best horse, but I think it's more of a rider's race.
I would completely agree that saving ground and the strategy involved with making your move here versus here, knowing how fast you're going. Was that difficult for you? Was that difficult trying to learn to develop a clock in your head?
It was at first, but with years of practice, I eventually developed one, and it's not spot on, but it's decently accurate.
Right. It's a tough thing to do. How would you describe that learning process? What would you do to try to develop that?
At first, I would wear a stopwatch and start it and then stop it when you finish. And before you look at it, you take a guess. And if you were close, you see what you have to improve on. And another thing my dad told me, start out by clocking yourself in your head when you're galloping from each pole. And then when you're breezing, try and do the same thing and try and develop a clock in your head.
That's very good advice. Very good advice. Your dad sounds like an excellent teacher. Does he still give you advice?
Oh, yeah. Every day.
Every day. That's fantastic. What did he say?
It's great, though.
What did he say about your ride in the Bluegrass Stakes? Was he proud? Did he have any advice for you there?
He was so proud. And basically he said, just ride it like it's another race.
That's fantastic. Did he get to take the trip up to Kentucky, or he didn't make it?
No, he didn't make it, but he watched it from his house down here.
Sure. That's so exciting and great that he's so supportive of you and provides such good advice for you. And what would you say is the process for you before the races? How would you prepare to ride maybe the card? What would you do to prepare and study?
Always the night before, I'm watching replays of the horses that I ride and the horses that I'm riding against. I like to go over the racing form, see how the race is going to set up for me, see what's the best position for me to lay, put myself in. And, of course, it doesn't always work out like you planned, but that's why you study. That way, when you have to make a change or an adjustment, you know what to do or what to expect.
Do you watch your replays after the races as well?
Yes, ma'am.
And you try to pick out things that maybe you would improve or that you really liked? So you
right,
do it again?
See, if I had my horse comfortable, see just the bigger picture, because when you're riding, you only have tunnel vision, what's right in front of you or what's happening at that point. Later on, you can go back and see, oh, well, this happened. Maybe I should have waited here. Oh, I should have went back to that spot. So it's just always learning.
Do you ever pick out riders in a race? Maybe you're not riding, but do you pick out certain riders to watch their style, their form?
Oh, yes, ma'am. I'm a huge fan of Irad Ortiz, Mike Smith, Javier Castellano, John Velasquez. The list goes on, but there's about 15 riders that I try to watch.
All very good choices.
And it's not everything they do. There's a few things that they do that I like, and maybe I can try and use it to my advantage or see how they ride. So when I do ride with them, I know how they ride and have an idea of what they're going to do.
For example, would you pick out something, maybe one of those riders you just named that you really like about their riding style?
Yes. There's one. My favorite rider right now, I would say, is Irad Ortiz. He's a young rider like myself, but he's very mature in the way he rides. He's very patient. He's an aggressive rider. He finishes strong, and I'm a big fan of his.
Nice. And so going back to your apprentice season, Tyler, you soon just took off. You won 6 stakes during your apprentice season all at Gulfstream. And as we heard during the break, you won the Grade 3 Rampart Stakes aboard Cali Star. Describe that entire season to us in the highs and the lows, and just take us through that time period.
It was the greatest time of my life. There's nothing like it. Everything was just kind of happening. Horses were running for me. Trainers were giving me all the confidence in the world, and it really showed in our statistics. But that was just from having good horses, good trainers, good owners, people, everyone staying loyal to us and really giving us a great opportunity.
Did you have the Eclipse Award in the back of your mind?
I tried not to. Of course, there's people always talking about it, but that wasn't our main focus. We just wanted to, our main focus was creating, trying to set up a career for myself.
Jockey Tyler Gaffalione joining me on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So you're just trying to get established there at Gulfstream Park, Tyler. Didn't really think about the Eclipse Award too much anyway. And as I mentioned, you just quickly began making a name for yourself, winning 6 stakes. Describe some of those best moments during that season.
Well, it definitely starts with my first stake win. It was aboard Celebrity Star for trainer Dave Casson. It was a 3/4 mile stake. And I was a long shot. I think she was 30-1.
Wow.
But I laid second the whole way and just inherited the lead at the top of the lane. She wound up just running away with it. She went back 5. And there was no better feeling than when I stood up past the wire.
That has to be incredible, especially aboard a 30-1 shot when you're not even supposed to win.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of a surprise to everyone, so it was just great.
That had to be
the last thing I expected.
Oh, of course. Of course. The best feeling in the world, no doubt. And any other great moments? I mean, you have so many.
I would definitely have to put the stakes win on Little Alexis for Carlo Vacareza. It was a hard-fought victory, head-in-head the whole way, and she wound up prevailing by a nose. It was a great feeling, though. And I had a lot of great moments at Gulfstream. But the 5 wins in one day with my trainer, Ralph Nix, that definitely tops it off.
That is incredible. That is incredible. You don't see that too often, 5 wins in one day. And for one trainer, in fact, that's quite unusual. And describe the feeling as you just continued racking those wins up throughout that day. Describe the feeling.
The first one, it was kind of unexpected. The filly didn't break. It was going 5/8 mile on the grass, and the filly didn't break out of the gate very well. And she was supposed to be in front, and she wound up just coming from dead last and just ran, circled the whole field, ran by them, and went easy. And then the second race was a hang-on mount. Ralph prepped the filly well, dropped her in for 16. She went easy by 8. And the third one was a first-time starter for a new owner of Ralph's, Bradley Thoroughbreds. The horse's name was Final Encore. But he had the one hole going 4.5 first time out for 2-year-olds. And he didn't break very well, and we got stuck on the inside, taking a lot of dirt first time out. He was jumping up and down a little bit, but he kept running, and we wound up squeezing through a spot at the top of the lane on the fence, and he went by 0.5 length. The fourth one was 5/8 mile race on the grass. The filly, second time out, she had just broken her mane, and she went to the lead and just hung on by a nose. And then the last race, it was the maiden. He went by 8, and just had all the confidence the whole way around there. Kind of knew I was going to win 5 that day.
Wow. That has to just be an incredible feeling. And Tyler, I'm going to ask you, when you win a race for a trainer, it's telling our audience here now, typically you'll go by the barn, swing by the barn in the morning and bring donuts or coffee or something like that. Did you have to bring 5 dozen donuts to trainer Ralph Nix's barn?
No, we wound up just catering. We did a Panera for breakfast, and then we did a barbecue for the guys for lunch. And we all just hung out, and it was a good time for everybody.
That's fantastic. What did Ralph Nix have to say about that incredible day?
He was just so proud of me, and himself and what we had accomplished together, and of course the horses and everyone that helped along that day
and
leading up to that day.
How big of an influence has Ralph Nix been on your career? Has he given you advice? Has he helped you a lot during your career?
Besides my father and along with Edgar Prado, I would say he's definitely right there. He's helped me with everything, absolutely anything that you can think of. Any problems that I had, I could go to him and talk to him about them. And he just helped develop me into a professional rider, from an apprentice into a professional.
That's great. And what would you say some of those specific things were that you sought out advice from him about?
He definitely taught me a good work ethic. I was there every morning at 5:30, galloping horses, jogging horses. He'd always have me working horses. I wouldn't always get to ride them, but it was for the team, and eventually I knew that he would give me the opportunity to ride some of these. So I just had to keep working hard and just work to get to where I want to be.
Well, it definitely paid off with that big day for trainer Ralph Nix. And Tyler, who would you say some of the other trainers there at Gulfstream, who are some of the other trainers who really gave you a shot, who were your biggest supporters, they put you on a lot of horses, gave you a lot of good advice?
Peter Walter was definitely up there. He was a great guy. He put us on a lot of winners, a lot of nice horses, helped teach me to ride nicer horses, better quality horses. And another person, Gustavo Delgado, he helped us out a lot. Antonio Santos, Stanley Gold. The list goes on. There's so many people that were involved, and I can't thank everyone enough.
And Tyler, how was it? That feeling had to be incredible when you found out that you won the 2015 Eclipse Award winning Apprentice of the Year. How was that?
It was crazy. Just to be nominated, it blew my mind. I never thought that it would actually happen. It was just kind of one of those things you dream about as a kid. But when we were at the Eclipse Awards, I was with my family. Ralph had joined us, my agent, and my valet. And we were all there, and they were about to announce they were coming to announce the Eclipse Award finalists for the Apprentice Jockey. And the camera set walked over to my table, and at that moment I knew that I won. And it was just like nothing else. It was incredible. Just so many emotions going through my head. And it was absolutely incredible. What a night.
Wow, I never thought about that before. I guess you would know that when the camera crew starts walking over, you better be ready. That's too funny. Was your father there?
Yes, he was.
What did he have to say? He had to be so proud.
Oh, he was crying. It was great.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Do you remember what you said when you received the reward?
Not really. I don't think it was the best speech, but there was so many emotions going through. I couldn't really think straight at that time.
I'm sure. I don't think I would be able to think very well either in such a moment, just such an incredible moment. I'm sure it's actually probably quite a blur when you think back on it. And so you win the Eclipse Award for Apprentice, and not long after that, you lose the bug, as we call it, and you become a journeyman rider. And that, there is often a lot of pressure on a jockey when that happens, because that's kind of an important transition period. That's when people see if you really have what it takes to compete with all of the other jockeys with the same weight. So
yes, ma'am.
How was that transition for you, and did you feel a lot of pressure?
No, I didn't feel much pressure because we went into that day with a lot of confidence, and we had prepped a couple horses for that specific day with trainer Ralph Nix, and we wound up winning four races that day.
Wow. So you were ready.
So the transition was pretty smooth at first, and we got right off the bat. I think we win 18 of 30 races at that meet, to begin that meet, and I wound up third in the standings at the Calder meet. We hit a little slow patch towards the end, but it was just that time of year. Horses were starting to get on that, coming back from their layoffs. There were many horses running, but it was it was great to get to ride as a professional and ride decent, good horses, and it just taught me a lot.
That's incredible. And Tyler, you mentioned before when you were first starting out a slow patch, and you said during the end of that meet, a little bit of a slow patch there as well. And of course, talking about your career here, we can see that that was not often the case. But what do you do mentally for yourself when you are going through maybe a slow spell? I know when I would go through those times in my own career, it can get to you mentally, and you have to be able to push that to the side and not think about it too much. How would you deal with that?
My valet always tells me you turn the page after each and every race. What happens in that race happen, there's nothing you can do. So you just got to keep moving on, focus on the good things, and all you got to do is keep riding. It's eventually things are going to turn, and you'll pick back up. That's how this business works. There's times where horses, you'll win five or six races in 1 week, but then you won't win one for 1 or 2 weeks, and it gets to you, but you just got to keep riding and go out there every race and give everything you got.
Just keep turning left, right, Tyler?
Yes, ma'am.
Keep turning left. Now, as we mentioned during the intro of, during the beginning of the show, you were here riding at Keeneland, and you're usually based out of Gulfstream. And how would you describe the difference riding at the two different tracks? Is there a big difference? I know many of the same riders come up here to Kentucky, but what's the difference maybe in the track surface or just in the people? What are the differences?
There's a lot of differences between the two tracks. Gulfstream, it's known as a speed-favoring track. Horses go fast here, and they keep going. Up at Keeneland, they have a little bit of a further stretch, so, and it's not deeper, it's just more of a tiring track. It's more fair, I would say. Horses come from way off the pace there. They can win in front. And just the texture of the surface, the way the horses carry themselves over it, just completely different.
Do you plan on coming back here to Keeneland before the end of the meet?
Not this meet, but we will be back there for sure this year.
Definitely. Good. And full-time for the fall meet?
We're not 100%. We're going to see how things go, but you never know.
You never know. What's next for the summer? Will you be based there at Gulfstream all summer?
Yes, ma'am. That's the plan. We're going to stay here all summer. We have commitments down here with a lot of trainers, so we're going to ride here and see where it takes us.
See where it takes you. And do you foresee that to you foresee yourself as staying there at Gulfstream for the immediate future anyway?
Yes, ma'am. This is a great facility down here. They offer year-round racing now and great management. They do a great job on the track and offer a good amount of money for good races. Always good horses, good trainers. So it's a good place to be right now.
Good place to be, Tyler. Just about a minute left. Future goals. What are your future goals?
Continued success. I'd like to win a grade one, of course, and of course be in the Kentucky Derby, but I would just like to have success in this business for the future.
Well, Tyler, we are wishing you all of the best. I see a lot of success in your future. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
If you missed any portion of tonight's show, you can check out our website, horseracingradio.net, and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. You will also find a full schedule for every show on the Horse Racing Radio Network on our website. We bring you something new almost every day of the week. Check it out, horseracingradio.net. Now be sure to join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Christina McManigal, and thank you for listening.